This is episode 682 of the AWS podcast, released on August 26, 2024.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the AWS podcast. So I'm Leesh here with you. Great to have you back. And we have all three availability zones here in host form. Availability zone A is Gillian Ford. G'day, Gillian. How are you doing?
Simon, it feels so good to have you back. Last time I did it, and I felt like such an imposter pretending to be you.
It would have been better. And availability zone B is Shruti Kopikar. G'day, Shruti. How you doing?
Good, and glad to be here as well.
And I am availability zone C. So no matter what happens to any one of us, service will continue. Let's jump into all the updates we have. The first one is for the AWS Marketplace. And the AWS Marketplace has announced the launch of Agreements Data Feed for the Seller Delivery Data Feed Service, or SDDS. This allows sellers the ability to programmatically create granular data from the Seller Insights dashboard in a seller-preferred business intelligence tool to track subscriptions, revenue, and renewals. If you haven't looked at the AWS Marketplace, it is full of all kinds of great software that you can deploy on your own EC2 instances, or you can actually consume software as a service APIs as well. It's actually a very handy way to get access to capability. Onto the topic of analytics, Amazon QuickSight has launched Customer Managed Key Encryption, CMK, for data source information, so you can encrypt and manage your QuickSight data source credentials and OAuth tokens. Amazon QuickSight also now includes nested filters, so you can use that to use one field in a data set to filter another field in the data set. So you might know this as a correlated subquery in SQL terms, so this lets you do some pretty powerful stuff. The Amazon Redshift Query Editor V2 now supports query import, so you can bring your existing SQL queries into the editor, so this makes it easier to streamline your data analyst workflow, etc., by letting you upload one or more SQL files from a desktop into the query editor, so no typing or rewriting of queries. Large language models powered by Amazon SageMaker Jumpstart are now available in Redshift ML. So, for example, you can use LLMs to summarize feedback, perform entity extraction, and conduct sentiment analysis on data in your Redshift table. And this is now generally available, so you can bring generative AI to your data warehouse. And we're happy to announce Amazon S3 Express One Zone Storage Class support on Amazon EMR. So this is really useful to perform things even faster. That's my technical term. Basically, it gives you a consistent single-digit millisecond data access for your most frequently accessed data and latency-sensitive applications. So this allows you to move data more quickly between Amazon EMR and S3, which means your workloads will run faster. Speaking of EMR, EMR 7.2 now supports Apache Spark 3.5.1. So my regular reminder to update your stuff. And the AWS Glue data catalog views are now GA with Amazon Athena as Amazon Redshift. So this allows customers to create, grant permissions on, and query multi-engine SQL views in the AWS Glue data catalog from Amazon Athena and Amazon Redshift. And this makes it easy for you to get up and running fast. And AWS Glue has announced a GA of the new ML-powered Glue data quality capability. So this uses ML-powered anomaly detection algorithms to detect those hard-to-find data quality issues and anomalies. Now, let me tell you, being a data engineer is not easy, so any tool that you can get access to is handy. And finally, in this topic, Amazon Data Zone has launched domain units and authorization policies. This allows customers to create business unit and team level organizations and manage policies per your business needs.
All right, we've got artificial intelligence. Amazon Bedrock customers can now leverage blueprints to jumpstart their use of agents. Blueprints are a collection of pre-built templates optimized for popular customer use cases. These templates allow for Amazon Bedrock customers to quickly experiment with agent-based applications without the need for complex configuration or lengthy development cycles. We're excited to announce the launch of Amazon Titan Image Generator V2, which is a new image generation model which brings to customers additional control and flexibility, including image conditioning, using ControlNet, subject consistency, and background removal. You can use a reference image to guide the generation of the output image. Image conditioning uses ControlNet techniques like canny edge to preserve edges and segmentation to identify regions in the reference image to guide image generation. Amazon Titan Image Generator V2 also lets you fine-tune the model for subject consistency, allowing you to preserve specific images, objects, or themes in the output. Claude 3.5 Sonnet and Claude 3 Haiku are now available in more regions. Amazon SageMaker Canvas now empowers enterprises to harness the full potential of their data by enabling support of petabyte-scale datasets. You can interactively prepare large datasets, create end-to-end data flows, and trigger AutoML experiments on petabytes, which is a substantial leap from the previous 5 gigabyte limit, with 50-plus connectors, intuitive chat with data interface, and petabyte support. Canvas provides a scalable, low-code, no-code ML solution for handling real-world enterprise use cases.
That's an incredible increase of size. I mean,
it really is. Yeah. A lot you can do with it. 5 gig
to petabytes.
Okay. Totally. And there's even more, yeah, from Canvas. So Canvas empowers you with new sampling techniques like random and stratified, allowing samples up to 200K rows, which is a tenfold increase. This makes it easy to gather data quality insights and understand the impact of your data transformations interactively before processing your entire data set, leveraging our new seamless integration with Amazon EMR Serverless. AWS HealthOmics now supports DSL and Nextflow version detection.
All right, next up we have compute. Amazon EC2 On-Demand Capacity Reservations, or ODCR as many of you know it, now enables you to split your capacity reservations, move capacity between capacity reservations, and modify your capacity reservations' instance eligibility attribute. ODCR is something that helps you reserve compute capacity for your workloads in a specific availability zone for any duration. So now, with these new features, when your workload requirements change, you have the flexibility to resize and reconfigure your reservations. Next, we are announcing the general availability of Amazon EC2 G6e instances powered by the NVIDIA L40S Tensor Core GPUs. Earlier this year, we launched the G6 instances, and the G6e instances offer 2x higher GPU memory and 2.9x faster GPU memory bandwidth compared to the G6 instances. They also deliver 2.5x better performance compared to G5 instances and up to 20% lower inference costs than P4D instances. So they're a really great option if you are running, for example, machine learning inference or single node training, and you've been using P4D instances for that. Now you can instead use G6e instances because they will deliver as much performance while lowering your costs by up to 20%. They're also really well suited for spatial computing use cases as well as graphics and gaming use cases. Amazon ECS provides the ability to restart containers without requiring a task relaunch. Amazon Elastic Container Registry, or ECR, announced the general availability of a new version of basic scanning. The new version of ECR basic scanning uses Amazon's native scanning technology, which is designed to provide customers with improved scanning results and vulnerability detection across a broad set of popular operating systems. This allows customers to further strengthen the security of their container images. Next, Amazon LightSail now offers a larger Windows instance bundle with 16 vCPUs and 64 gigabyte memory. AWS Batch adds support for canceling queued jobs. And last but not the least, with the release of Carpenter version 1.0.0, Carpenter's APIs graduate out of beta. Carpenter is a flexible, efficient, and high-performance Kubernetes compute management solution that customers can use with EKS or any conformant Kubernetes cluster. It helps improve your application availability and cluster efficiency by rapidly launching the right-sized compute resources. So whatever is the right size for your workload, it can, you know, automate launching those in response to the changing application workload. Carpenter also provides just-in-time compute resources to meet your application's needs and will soon automatically optimize a cluster's compute resource footprint to reduce costs and improve performance. So alongside the graduation from beta, this 1.0 release includes three new features. One is the ability to specify disruption reasons, example, underutilization, emptiness, drift, or disruption of budgets, etc. Second is a forceful disruption mode that helps customers balance application availability against security requirements. And third, an expansion of Consolidate After, which lets customers better tune Carpenter's consolidation feature to meet their cost efficiency and application availability requirements. I'm really excited that Carpenter is out of beta. I've spoken to a few customers. In fact, I spoke with one of our customers, Genius Sports, NVIDIA's GTC this year, and they orchestrated a lot of their graphics as well as AIML workloads using EKS and Carpenter. And, you know, other customers like Prodigy have seen up to 40 to 60% cost savings by using Carpenter.
That's serious.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is. And I'm excited that, you know, it's kind of coming out of beta. It's going to be a whole thing, and the team is going to continue innovating and adding more functionality.
Yeah, I'm excited about it, that one too. Every time I've been on a customer meeting and they want to talk about best practices with EKS, Carpenter is always one that's on the list. So this is really exciting to see.
Absolutely.
Now we've got two quick updates on cost management. Announcing delegated administrator for Cost Optimization Hub. So now you can designate a member account as the delegated administrator. This allows that account to view cost optimization recommendations in the Cost Optimization Hub with administrator privileges, giving you greater flexibility to identify resource optimization opportunities centrally. And the next one is AWS announces support for cost allocation tags on AWS Transit Gateway.
A quick update in the area of customer engagement. Amazon Connect now provides an API to update routing criteria on a queued contact, so you can make changes when you need to, programmatically. Let's move on to the subject of databases. There's always lots to talk about here. Amazon Neptune now introduces support for Property Graph Store in Neptune to build more reliable GraphRAG applications. So these are graph retrieval augmented generation applications. And this allows you to combine knowledge graphs stored in Amazon Neptune with Llama Index, which is a popular open source framework for building applications with LLMs, such as those available in Amazon Bedrock. So we're excited to introduce the capability to add natural language querying via the text-to-cipher retriever, knowledge graph retrieval via the cipher template retriever, and knowledge graph enhanced RAG creation and querying via the supported extractors and retrievers. Basically, you can apply way more grunt to the way you query your network databases. And Amazon Neptune Analytics now supports OpenCypher queries over RDF graphs. So this enhancement aims to bridge the gap between RDF graphs and labeled property graphs, I should say, or LPGs, allowing organizations to harness the best of both worlds without being constrained by the limitations of traditional technology choices. Things change. You need to move with those things. Some version updates. Amazon RDS for SQL Server supports minor versions 2016 GDR, 2017 CU31 GDR, 2019 GDR, and 2022 GDR. My reminder, patch your stuff. Amazon RDS for MySQL supports new minor version 8.0.39. Amazon RDS for DB2 now supports loading data from Amazon S3. So now you can get your data up and in nice and quickly. Check out the documentation for the steps to do that. Amazon Aurora now supports PostgreSQL 16.3, 15.7, 14.12, 13.15, and 12.19. You'd think that the Black Hat conference had just happened and lots of updates for lots of products are coming along. Announcing PG Vector 0.7.0 support in Aurora PostgreSQL. So this is an open source extension for PostgreSQL for storing vector embeddings in your database. PG Vector provides vector similarity searching capabilities, enabling Aurora usage for semantic search and retrieval augmented generation in generative AI applications. This particular version adds parallelism to improve the hierarchical and navigable small worlds index build time in Aurora, and adds two more vector types, half-vect for storing dimensions as two-byte floats, and sparse-vec for storing up to 1,000 non-zero dimensions, and it now supports indexing binary vectors using the PostgreSQL native bit type. PostgreSQL 17 Beta 3 is available in RDS database preview environments. So if you're testing stuff, this is the place to test it before you make the move. And we're also announcing Terraform support for Amazon TimeStream for InfluxDB deployments, so you can automate and streamline your time series management workflows with this particular approach to infrastructure as code.
Now on to developer tools. AWS CodeBuild now integrates with GitHub apps as the authentication method to access your repositories. A GitHub app connection can be set as the default authentication method for all projects, or can be specified for an individual project source. With GitHub apps, you can use short-lived tokens with fine-grained permissions and have control over which repositories the app can access. In a CodeBuild project, GitHub app connections are established via AWS Code Connections, where you can further limit the access to the connections by using IAM roles and resource policies. AWS CodeBuild now supports configuring multiple access tokens for each source provider. You can store your OAuth or personal access tokens in AWS Secrets Manager and specify them in CodeBuild projects. This feature is available for your GitHub, GitHub Enterprise, and Bucket source repositories.
Let's talk a bit about end-user computing. Amazon Workspace's thin client now supports Amazon Workspace's pool. So with this capability, customers now have the flexibility to choose between Amazon Workspace's personal, which is a fully persistent desktop, a Workspace's pools, which is a cost-effective non-persistent virtual desktop with support for existing Microsoft 365 apps for enterprise licenses to help reduce cost and optimize agility. Also happy to introduce the G4DN Workspaces Personal Bundle with the Workspaces Streaming Protocol for Windows. Now you can run your graphics intensive and accelerated applications on Windows using the G4DN Workspaces with WSP in AWS. This gives you access for applications that are optimized for NVIDIA GPUs using NVIDIA libraries such as CUDA, CUDNN, OptiX, and Video Codecs SDK. This allows you to do lots of cool stuff at the 4K resolution, and it also includes support for multiple monitors as well.
Next up, we have quite a few updates under management and governance. AWS Control Tower launches landing zone version selection to enable customers to select from a set of versions when performing a landing zone update, reset, or upgrade operation. Starting with landing zone version 3.1 and above, customers can update or reset in place their landing zone on their current version or upgrade to a version of their choice. A landing zone is a well-architected multi-account AWS environment based on security and compliance best practices. AWS Control Tower automates the setup of a new landing zone using best practice blueprints for identity, federated access, logging, and account structure. AWS Control Tower customers can now programmatically get descriptions for managed controls. These APIs enable automation of AWS Control Tower's library of managed controls, improving ease of use for control deployment. With this release, customers can extend AWS Control Tower governance into regions where some of their enabled controls are not available. Customers can also enable a control in additional regions, even though the control is not supported in all of their governed regions. AWS Control Tower now supports these new two APIs. List controls, which is an API call that returns a paginated list of all available controls in AWS Control Tower controls library, and get control, which is an API call that returns details of an enabled control, which includes target identifier, control summary, target regions, and drift status of the control. Next, Amazon CloudWatch Internet Monitor enhances dashboard and traffic suggestions. AWS Config expands support for 124 resource types across 29 AWS regions. If you have enabled AWS Config recording for these resource types, you will benefit from more comprehensive coverage across additional AWS regions. This expansion provides you greater consistency across AWS regions for multiple AWS Config use cases, including resource inventory, resource configuration change tracking, resource compliance and security monitoring, auditing, and remediation. You can view a complete list of all the supported types across AWS regions on the Resource Coverage by Region Availability page. Amazon CloudWatch Application Signals now supports Amazon Bedrock, enabling users to troubleshoot errors and slow performance in generative AI applications. So for example, if you are an application developer who is operating a large language model application that invokes the Bedrock foundation models, you can now track if the customer support API is experiencing any issues. You can then also drill into precisely correlated trace contributing to the error, along with correlated logs to establish the root cause, such as invalid model inputs or long response times from LLMs or anything that leads to poor end user experience. Tracking model performance within your application allows you to evaluate different models and choose the best one for your use case, optimizing for cost and customer experience. I'm really interested and excited in learning more about this because, you know, the whole idea of Amazon Bedrock is to be able to deliver choice and that lets you optimize your end application for both the customer experience and cost. But as developers are building that application, they need tools like this, the CloudWatch application signals, that can show them exactly what, you know, allow them to dig into exactly what is wrong where.
Well, gives them feedback, yeah. Feedback and explanation. Observability is the thing.
It is. It absolutely is. This one's something to dig into. Okay, next up, AWS announces the launch of the AWS support official channel on AWS Repost. AWS customers now have access to curated content for operating at scale on AWS, authored by AWS support and AWS managed services experts. In this new channel, you can find technical solutions for complex problems, operational best practices, and insights into AWS support and AMS offerings. You know, AWS Repost is a really vibrant community with such great content. And so to have AWS support and AWS managed services experts now officially present here, putting out content, it's great. It's exciting. AWS now supports an integrated mobile experience for AWS services in the AWS console mobile app.
One quick update on migration and modernization. AWS Snowball Edge Storage Optimized 210 terabyte device now offers a 100 terabyte pricing option for data migration.
Now let's talk about networking and content delivery. Also just one update, but an important one. AWS announces the general availability of private IPv6 addressing for VPCs and subnets with Amazon VPC IP Address Manager, or IPAM. On AWS, private IPv6 addresses can take the form of unique local IPv6 unicast addresses, or ULAs, and global unicast addresses, GUAs, and can only be used for private addresses. These IPv6 addresses are not and cannot be advertised on the internet by AWS. Within IPAM, customers can configure private IPv6 addresses in a private scope, provision ULA and GUA, and use them to create VPCs and subnets for private access. Now, customers want private IPv6 addresses for the innate security boost it offers, as resources using private IPv6 addresses cannot access the internet directly. It also provides assurance for compliance, as customers can demonstrate that their resources with private IPv6 addresses are not internet accessible through just a quick audit. These customers have no intention of directly routing traffic from these resources to the internet via AWS and instead use proxies or network appliances for selective internet access via AWS, or route traffic through their on-premise network where the IPv6 address range is advertised to the internet. For such use cases, private IPv6 addressing helps simplify IP addressing and VPC network configuration in IPv6. So if you are into that sort of stuff, this is going to be really useful for you.
All right, next up, we have one update under satellite. Digital Twin is now generally available for AWS Ground Station, which provides virtualized ground station infrastructure that allows you to perform space-to-ground compatibility testing. AWS Ground Station is a fully managed service that lets you control satellite communications, process data, and scale your operations without having to worry about building or managing your own ground station infrastructure. With this new feature, you can now more quickly and easily integrate your satellite communication and scheduling workflows with AWS Ground Station.
Now, security, identity, and compliance. And the Cognito team has been busy, so we've got two updates from the Cognito team, all related to advanced security features. So the first is going to help you detect additional risk factors and cover custom authentication flows. So advanced security features, they now identify risks such as impossible travel, where a user signs in from two different locations in a time period implausible for travel between them. And also detects risks in custom authentication flows. So customers can improve the security of applications that use custom authentication factors by enabling risk detection and adaptive authentication. And there is more. You now have the option to disallow users from reusing previous passwords, helping you address compliance needs. You can also have the option to stream security events from advanced security features to an Amazon S3 bucket, Amazon Kinesis Firehose, or CloudWatch Insights. And this allows you to combine advanced security features events with security signals from other AWS and third-party tools, helping you gain better insights and elevating security.
And finally today, let's talk about storage. We're happy to announce the general availability of a logically air-gapped vault in AWS Backup. This is a new type of AWS Backup vault that allows secure sharing of backups across accounts and organizations, supporting direct restore to help reduce recovery time from a data loss event. Logically air-gapped vault stores immutable backup copies that are locked by default and isolated with encryption using AWS-owned keys. You can get started using the console, the API, or the CLI, and target backups to a logically air-gapped vault by specifying it as a copy destination in your backup plan. And you can share the vault for recovery or restore testing with other accounts using AWS Resource Access Manager. Now, this is really useful if you're trying to mitigate against issues like ransomware and other nefarious things that happen. So this gives you yet another level of control and protection in your data management strategy. And Amazon EFS now supports up to 30 gigabits per second, a 50% increase of read throughput. Now, this is what I love about using AWS services is they get better and better as you go along, without you having to do anything. So for example, in March 2024, we increased the Elastic Throughput read throughput limit to 20 gig from 10 gig per second to support the growing demand for read-heavy workloads like AI machine learning. Now we're further increasing the read throughput to 30 gigs per second, extending EFS's simple, fully elastic, and provisioning-free experience to support throughput-intensive AI and machine learning workloads for model training, inference, financial analytics, and genomic data analytics. Let's face it, in life, everything needs to get faster and better, and that's the work that our teams try and do for and on your behalf. Lots of great updates there, some really cool things to play with. Anything that really leapt out at you, Shruti?
I think I'm going to be really biased here because I was involved in the launch of the Amazon EC2 G6E instances. But, you know, EC2 provides the broadest and deepest portfolio of compute, and we strive to provide our customers with choice. And I think this G6E instance is really going to alleviate a lot of cost and availability concerns for customers, you know, who are using, say, the P4D instances today and having a hard time finding availability. They can now use G6E for inference and for single node training. Similarly, those who were using G5 instances but really wanted a little bit more performance but didn't quite want to go all the way to P4D because of cost constraints have this option now. So I'm super excited about that one.
Nice. And how do folks get in touch with you?
They can find me on LinkedIn, Shruti Koparkar, or on X.
And Jillian, what about your favorite of the day?
Same one, actually, as Shruti, which I am not surprised that Shruti said that one, but I agree. I mean, there's so many customers I know that I've seen use the G5s, and they've been asking me about the G6Es. So I'm sure a lot of people here are just really excited to get started with them. What about you, Simon?
Well, I'm going to go with the EFS performance increase because I think my two favorite things of services on AWS, besides, you know, new capabilities and all that cool stuff, is price reductions and performance increases. Preferably both. Because I just love when we can give our customers a benefit, a boost, and they don't have to do anything for it, but they can get the benefit of it because it unlocks a lot of new opportunities and things that they can do. But also in my own headcanon, I imagine, you know, one of our very wise, experienced AWS customers walking to their boss and saying, "Boss, I'm thinking I'm going to spend the week working on increasing performance on AFS for us. I've got some ideas." Then walking away and enjoying a very relaxing week and then coming back a week later and going, "Did it. I got you 50% increase." That's just in my imagination.
I love that. Yeah.
I don't recommend actually doing that, but it's a fun experiment in your head. But seriously though, getting these increases without having to do anything to get them is pretty cool. So I get excited about that. Jillian, how do folks get in touch with you?
Miss Jill Ford on X.
Excellent. And for myself and for the podcast in general, AWS podcast at amazon.com is the place to do it. And until next time, keep on building.